2. Island Time. When Shun woke, some time had passed. That was clear. Time had passed, and there were no airplanes in the sky. The jungle was verdant, and the inside of the survival suit was warm and stable. Breathing was happening, regular and reassuring. Every in-breath hurt, but not as much as they had done earlier. There was memory of injury. Someone had dangled from a mini chute over a jungle. Someone had a lacerated foot. Someone had slipped and fallen. But time had passed since then. The body had been safe for a while. The person woke again and slept again. Eventually, normal time resumed. Shun woke with a start, tried to curl into a fetal position, and found she couldn't. She was in a coffin, a trap. She shouted, "Help! Help!" The suit said, "You are safe," Shun said. "The fuck I am? What happened? Where am I?" The suit said. "This is a complicated question." She tried to do mindful breathing, but couldn't remember the counting numbers. 6, 7, 8, 4, 2, 2? No, that was football. Start with the basics. Where are we? Look around. She looked through the visor of what she remembered now was not, in fact, a coffin. She was face down on a promontory overlooking a deep trench of thick green foliage. She could not judge the depth. Perhaps a crack in the rock filled with lichen? She pulled herself up. Her suit's servo motors gently stabilized her. She was on a precipice looking down on a bowl of forest. Must have been 5 miles broad. "Would you like some food?" said the overly helpful voice in her ear. Shun said, "I'd like to get out of here." The suit unhinged its front plates, and Shun padded around the jungle floor while it sat itself down behind her, an iron giant. She wiggled her toes. The jungle was filled with humming, bustling life. Insects thrummed past her face. Birds scattered from the tops of trees. Green shoots pushed forward around great old trunks. "Fuck," said Shun. There were stoat boxes scattered around the clearing. One of them contained self-heating meals, and she ate a tray of pumpkin risotto. It tasted like the amber daylight dripping through the canopy. The wound on her foot was still painful, but when she examined it, it was clean and less deep than she'd remembered. As she ate, she noticed a series of long bruises on the inside of her left arm. The suit was sitting up in the position she'd left it, like a friend, a companion. "What's this?" Shun said. "It looks like you gave me an injection there." "Yes," said the suit. "You were going into shock. I gave you light sedation via transdermal infusion. We agreed you needed a nice long nap."
That was an unusual interpretation of the word nap.
"How long was I out for?" said Shun. 5 days, said the suit. "Although you woke periodically for some nourishment."
Shun didn't remember any of that. It didn't feel like it had been 5 days.
"I don't want you to give me sedation again, okay?"
"Okay," said the suit. "I'll save that to your preferences."
As ever, when dealing with algorithms, these responses felt insulting, unable to measure up to the gravity of the feeling. How could it have been 5 days? What the hell had happened to her? And secondarily, but not unimportantly, the world. Unable to decide between any of these questions, Shun settled for the most obvious and perhaps the most pressing. "Suit," she said. "Where am I?"
"You are on Admiral Huntsy Island," it said, "northeast of Papua New Guinea and part of the Future Safe Environmental Sanctuary."
"The fuck I am?"
"Yes," said the suit. "The fuck you are, indeed."
Admiral Huntsy Island. Named for some colonizing British guy who had done, on the value system of the time, very well in dealing with some native people and, even better, in defeating an Axis power. It had been decided on balance that the island should probably keep the name, and, as the native people had been dealt with so successfully that there were none of them left at all, that the island could be declared a wildlife preserve. Lai Chun had only heard of it because a big deal had been made a few years earlier, when Fantail, Anvil, and Medlar had bought up several wildlife preserves from beleaguered and overstretched post-pandemic governments and taken on covenants to keep them entirely free of humans for at least 100 years, in exchange for the rights to monitor them with flying ant-sized drones, monetize the resulting footage of wild creatures in their natural habitats, and create virtual reality reconstructions of the future-safe environmental sanctuaries exclusively available through their proprietary platforms. Even the airspace was closed, which perhaps explained why there were no planes in the sky. It was extremely illegal to be here. In theory, if humans came here, they would be hunted down by drones that would warn them to leave and then, in ascending order, stun them, drag them away, and, in extremis, use authorized lethal force. This strong stuff in a limited and faraway place made everyone feel like they were really doing something to combat habitat destruction. Shun even vaguely remembered seeing Lenk Skellish filled with glossy pride at the press conference. Fantail had released some press materials that very deftly skated over what precisely Admiral Hunsey had done to native people here, and focused instead on the island's marvelous, unchallenged, and uncomplicated emptiness. She sat in the half-open suit and looked at the map through the visor. The island was around 42 miles long and 28 miles across at its widest point. There was a deep ravine along the southwestern quarter with geological layers clearly visible on the barren cliffs to the east, and a series of small hills along the spine, like the knobs of vertebrae. Admiral Hunsey Island, said the scrolling green text, is the largest island in an archipelago northeast of Papua New Guinea and is part of the Bismarck Sea, designated area of natural beauty and a wildlife protection future-safe zone. No, but, said Shun, if I were on Admiral Hunsey Island, I'd be dead or electrocuted by the drones. Those measures can be rerouted by authorized personnel for certain purposes, said the suit. What purposes, said Shun. In certain emergency situations, said the suit. What personnel, said Shun. Ah, said the suit. How do you feel about a walk? Inside the suit, Shun walked for most of the day. She looked with interest at the marked-up landscape, each item around her labeled with a green-colored name and some information about its uses. Whoever made this thing had taken native knowledge about this place and mechanized it. They had a few stops where Jun left the suit to stretch her legs or to take a look at something interesting, but mostly walking in the suit was more comfortable than walking without. The servo motors stabilized her on the uneven terrain and powered her huge 8-foot person steps. Just before dusk, the suit brought her to a clearing with a well-ordered campsite, a sleeping platform made of logs lashed together with plastic twine, fresh water in stoat tubs with spigots, walls of stoat boxes filled with supplies screening off an area for a shower. Three people sat around a neat campfire, each accompanied by a survival suit like her own. The suits splayed open so that they looked a little like chairs. A woman in her 60s with a steel gray bob, a man in his late 50s, tan, short, and stocky with thick arms, a lean man in his early 40s with long legs stretched out in front of him and messy blonde hair. Shun raised her visor.
Who the fuck is this? Said Zimri Nomik. How the fuck is she here?
I said I saw something in the sky a few nights ago, said Ellen Bywater. The long, lean man stared at the scudding clouds.
I think Martha was fucking her. I guess everyone's allowed a freebie, said Lenk Skellish.